What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome to another edition of Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdahl. You'll find me at C70 and at the Cardinal Conclave with the C70 at the Bat blog. With me, Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily. You'll find him on Twitter, amedlock1. It's been another successful week for the Cardinals, when you look at it by wins and losses. The Cardinals pushed their way over 500. The Cardinals also have figured out how to play every other day, it seems like, with an off day on Monday, a rain out on Wednesday, and then a rain out today. There weren't as many days of baseball in this week, but there were still plenty of games and still plenty to talk about. Alan, before we get into the rewind, any just overall general thoughts before we kind of break down the games?
You can't complain about 9-11, especially after that terrible start. You know, 3-9 was awful, and we were all kind of giving up on him, including me. And whatever happened on that trip back to St. Louis, where, you know, I think there was a closed door meeting or two, they really kind of picked it up. But it's easy to pick it up when you're pitching, when you're starting pitching, it's pitching like it is, and the bullpen's starting to come around. So it, I feel like it's an exciting time. I say that hesitantly, you know, because they could fall right back into one of those ruts defensively. But they seem to be hitting right now, and they seem to be pitching. You know, the combination is really working out.
Yeah, you gotta push them over 500. 12-11, only one game out of the Cubs' pace, and sitting in second place at the moment in the National League Central. Again, for the fact that they started off 3-9, to be able to be back here at a pace for, I think, 85 games is where they're at. That's kind of the team that we thought we were going to see, maybe a little bit more than that. And so we'll see if they can continue to do that. But before we get too much into their future, let's talk about their past in the Redbird Rewind.
He got him! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
And like we said, it was a good week for the Cardinals. We talked last on Friday, and so after that, the Cardinals took the last two games of the Brewers series, had the off day, lost a heartbreaker against the Blue Jays to open up the series with the team from Toronto. 6-5 and 11 innings in a game that was kind of messy, kind of interesting, kind of everything. Rain out, sweep the doubleheader on Thursday, one in extra innings, one not, and then beating the Reds on Friday night after pulling out to a large lead. They had to come back and hold it, but given how they did not look that great against the Reds earlier in the year, that might be something to discuss. Let's talk about that Brewer series, I guess, to start with. Those were the games, if I'm remembering right, and I'll pull it up to see if I am. It's Lance Lynn and Mike Leake pitching there. And I guess in general, those are guys that we've seen a lot of good stuff out of. We only saw Leake the one time this week against the Brewers. But Lance Lynn, man, he's looked sharp in both of those outings, didn't he?
He has. He is... You know, as Cardinals fans, we always kind of jump to conclusions on this, but if they came out tomorrow and said during the rainout they worked on a $100 million extension with him, you wouldn't hear me complain. He's just a bulldog. I think he's greatly underrated, and I think that we're seeing that that his stability was something that was greatly missed last year. Yeah, Leake has been amazing as well. That last game against the Brewers, I don't think he had his best stuff, but he just battled. I think there's that, you know, we had talked early in the season, even before the season started, to where Lynn had came out and said, expect big things out of Mike Leake. because there's a comfort level that he's reached now to where he's comfortable with everybody. And I think that may even point to kind of some clubhouse clicks last year, but maybe reading too much into it. But he is really he's shown to be a good signing, you know, at this point. So they're really leading the way. Walk has pitched well. I think there's two, you know, I think we all think that Martinez is going to get going to straighten things up. His movement's amazing right now, and his velocity's not down. I don't think there's any injury issues. I think it's probably all above the shoulders right now. He'll get it figured out. And then Wainwright's battled. You know, he still gives away the last two starts, giving up a lot of hard contact, but has really pitched well and kept him in the game. And at this point, he may be a 4 or 5 starter, and that's all we kind of could ask.
Yeah, I think the only thing that came out of that Brewer series that was even questionable, maybe concerning, not really concerning, but, you know, we get into Sunday's game, and the Cardinals are up 6-2. They get up 6-2 in the bottom of the top of the eighth. Trevor Rosenthal pitches the eighth, which, again, with a 4-run lead, you're running Trevor Rosenthal out there. Okay, iffy, but he was warmed up. They kind of scored their in runs late in the inning. You probably just go ahead and go out with him there. Mm-hmm. In the ninth, they go with Broxton, who gives up a home run and puts a runner on. And then they go to Sung Won Oh for the third straight day. Now, again, it was a save situation. I get that. You'd already used Rosenthal. But, I mean, one, you could argue Broxton didn't need to be out there. Again, at this point in time, Tyler Lyons had been on the team for almost a week and still hadn't pitched.
Yes.
But on the flip side of that, when you took Broxton out, it was a 3-run lead, and you still had a chance to get out of that. It felt like it was using O a little bit. I mean, we've already seen that O's had some problems, but it almost felt like wearing him out to use him 3 days in a row. And in fact, when you get to the game on Tuesday night, the extra inning game, not only is O not available, but apparently Broxton and Rosenthal weren't either, mm-hmm. even with a day off. Now, again, we've never been big fans. I don't think anybody's been big fans of Mike Matheny's bullpen management. But that would have seemed a little bit, I don't know, egregious, I guess, even for Matheny.
Oh, I agree. And the simplistic view on this, and I may be completely wrong. The one luxury you have right now, whether they're going to admit it or not, you have two closers. And it's you have O, and of course you have Rosenthal. You've been warming up Lyons on parts of two different innings. It made zero sense to me to bring Rosenthal in the eighth if he's not going to finish it out. You know, I don't know. I was like, you're wasting another arm just in the bullpen. I don't know why he didn't show any. It kind of improved this week, and we'll get to that. But I didn't understand why he didn't show. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors either, whether there's some soreness or what. But Lyons was clearly up. He could have pitched that seventh or eighth and then had Rosenthal ready for the ninth to where you could have saved O. And if you're not going to go back-to-back days with Rosenthal, which they kind of came out to say and admitted yesterday, it just didn't make sense to use him in that role. I thought the management was really poor in that one, and it almost cost him a game. I mean, you could kind of see it going down the drain because O didn't seem sharp, but at least he got him out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you had O gave up that – allowed Broxton's runner to score and had – another runner on. I think he had two runners on with Eric Thames up coming up, and that I think everybody just said, okay, this is done. This game is going to go badly. You know,
he's seeing beach balls right now.
Yeah,
and especially in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean anybody pitching to him is bad, but and especially since I was not Ben Sharp, but he got out of that and he got the next guy and it turned out okay. But I think it's just a little bit iffy, like you said, like as you kind of point out there. Not something I'd really give it a consideration to, but if the Cardinals don't score those extra runs, they're probably doing the Rosenthal O thing again. And you're right, it just feels like you can use that flexibility. I mean, we saw that earlier the last week with the Pirates series. You know, he ran O Monday and Tuesday and then went to Rosenthal on Wednesday. It's a little surprising that they didn't do that again here. It feels wrong to not be able to. You don't want to run those guys out there that often, but you know it's difficult to get that through Matheny's head, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that's one concern that I have right now. I mean, there's several when they're playing. It's not as blown out of proportion right now since they're playing well, but he really relies on O and Bowman a lot. Mm-hmm. I worry about Bowman. You know, he actually, he finally gave up that run this week, which they're fine with that. I mean, he's going to be sixth, seventh, eighth inning guy. I can live with that. And I think he's awesome. So I just hope it doesn't turn into a situation like Maness, where Maness was unreal for a year, but, you know, he was used every day and basically had literally thrown his arm off. I just hope that doesn't turn into a situation that, that happens to Bowman by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, and I'm not disagreeing. I think that's exactly the right. What's funny is we all have focused on the fact that Bowman has thrown a lot of games. He's pitched in 13 games out of, what, 22 so far?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot. That's a pretty high percentage. But he's only tied for first on the team. I actually, before I pulled these stats up just now, I would have assumed that he had at least a game or two lead on anybody else. But Brett Cecil has also pitched in 13 games. Now he's only, Bowman has thrown two more innings, and I think we see Bowman go a little bit more, get into some situations. But, you know, Cecil's a guy that they're apparently going to lean on a lot as well. And that's a little bit, had a little bit more mixed results.
Bowman starts a lot of innings to where Cecil doesn't. So, I mean, can you have it pulled up to where I'd like to see how many people each one of them's faced as well.
Yeah, let me see. Well, I mean, like I said, Bowman's throwing.
But I know exactly where you're coming from. And, I'm glad, actually,
here you go. This is kind of interesting. And it's not a good thing for Brett Cecil. Both of them have faced 43 batters.
Oh, interesting.
That just means that Cecil has, you know, there's a lot more of those batters that have reached against Cecil.
I know. It seemed like 25 of those at bats were in that first game.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's just, and again, Cecil has done a pretty good job. He still has some moments. I know that he had the play, you know, he got charged with some runs as we kind of transition a little bit into this Blue Jays series game. You know, that first game against the Jays, and I saw, you know, part of this, I missed out on some, but you know, that's the game that he gave up a run that wasn't earned, partly on a throwing error, but he walked a guy and he gave up a hit, and in a third of an inning, that's tough to deal with in a game that the Cardinals had rallied to tie. He came up and immediately kind of blew that, got off the hook with a Fowler RBI in the ninth, but you know, that's tough. They're going to happen, and I don't think anybody should be writing Brett Cecil off, although some may be. But you still want him to be a little bit more reliable, I guess, than that if we're going to see him that many times.
Sure, and you know, he historically has bad starts, and I hope that that's a lot of it. I thought he's looked pretty good after that first week or so, and think about it. In the end of spring, he was really bad too. And then had that bad start, and you're just like, oh, this could be awful. But now he seems to be coming down. And I think a lot of this more is kind of like what we talked about last week. I think there's more structure now. And I just think everybody's kind of filling out their spots and figuring out where they, where they're going to land and, you know, where they're going to be needed. It also could turn into an ugly situation as far as, you know, I don't know how many people – I think everybody knows how you and I feel about this now. But the bullpen management of Matheny – leaves a lot to be desired, and you just wonder if throwing Rosenthal, who I figure is the best bullpen arm in that, in an unsettled role, how much that's going to, how these many of these situations we're going to have where these are winnable games and we let them slip by.
Well, and for me, and I had a little discussion on Twitter with somebody this week, or maybe last, I just feel like it's obvious that the team has given up on this idea of Trevor Rosenthal being the Andrew Miller type that was on the playoffs last year, that would come in and pitch a couple innings in key spots and lock a game down before the closer could get to it. I mean, because we haven't seen Rosenthal pitch more than an inning, I don't think, all year long. But it's and again, I think that the person that I was talking to on Twitter, we talked about this, and he was indicating that, you know, because of the workload, you know, they started to up that workload in the spring, and then he got hurt, and so they're back off. And if that's tied to workload, maybe that's fine, but it was a lat injury. But we see that out of starters all the time. I don't know if I don't know. I really don't. But it feels like to me that they've kind of backed off of this really, really quickly. And this is a time where, especially with Kevin Seager struggling, with some others that are, I think the bullpen for the most part is really kind of shaping up. But there are times, like you said, that Brewers game where you could throw him two innings or something of that nature. it would really seem to help the team. And I don't know. I think they're, it feels to me they're being a little bit overly cautious with Rosenthal for a guy that has had some success in the past in multiple innings. I mean, that's the whole reason we talked about him being a starter, is he started before. He had that great start, you know, three innings at the end of last year. For the fact that just all of a sudden, you know, he pitched a few extra innings in spring, not really that many, and then he gets an injury to back off of that is kind of strange.
Yeah, it seems like there's several things that they've done with Rosenthal to where they've given up on plans quickly. The only time that they've really stuck with him, what they said they were going to do, was last year when he probably stayed mm-hmm. in the closer role probably about five or six appearances too many. So, you know what? I don't know. And I worry about Rosenthal, too, just because I think he's looked fantastic. I mean, he hit 102 the other day. I mean, that's, you know, you're looking at Chapman type, you know, type numbers. But then in the very next day, you hear, hey, we're not going to pitch him back-to-back days. He's having some more than usual soreness issues. And you're just like, that's not what I want to hear, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would love to have that super reliever role. It's one of those to where I didn't know if they had it in them to even try it in the beginning. And I don't know if they've given up on it or if it was never going to come to fruition in the first place. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's a role that's going to be very tough to do in the regular season versus the playoffs. That's what I've always said. But I do think that there is that spot for Rosenthal to be able to pitch a couple of innings, to come in the seventh and eighth, you know, or, you know, be able to shut some people down and not necessarily just be that eighth inning guy. I know Mike Matheny really likes to focus, you know, this guy's the seventh, this guy's the eighth, this guy's the ninth, and let's do this over and over again. But I don't know that is the best way to use these guys. You know, that again, that said, the bullpen is not really much of the issue. You know, they had a few moments this week, but for the most part, I don't, you know, again, you don't really want to see Jonathan Broxton out there when the game's on the line. And Kevin Sechrist, he will come mm-hmm. through occasionally, but he's really, really scary. But other than that, I think pretty much everybody out there, we saw a hiccup from Sokolovich on Friday night, but he pitched 2 2/3 innings against the Blue Jays and extra innings where every, you know, a mistake ends you, and did well until the very end. That wasn't his fault. You know, I don't have much problem with anybody out there.
No, I agree. I worried about it yesterday after him giving up some mm-hmm. runs and giving up the bomb yesterday that I just don't want there to be an excuse now to keep Broxton and have him be the fall guy. So just through history, I feel like that may be what happens. I don't know. But, yeah, that's I feel like there's enough with Broxton not performing and not really having a role other than a mop-up role and Sechrist having obvious issues. I feel like those two are the weak links at this point. And that's you think that that's easily fixable. So the Sechrist, they seems to be more of a mystery. I don't think it's much of a mystery. I think that I think something's wrong. Yeah. You know, he hasn't been effective and his velocity's way down. So I think that that's something they need to dig into a little bit more. Not that they're not, but you know, it's obviously they're still running him out here and he's getting outs, but you know, everything he threw yesterday was hittable. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a problem. And then you know, the Broxton is just such a head scratcher at this. as Cardinals fans, when all these things happen, we just start thinking DFA pretty easy. But, you know, do they have anybody to fill that spot right now? I don't know.
Yeah, and then there's going to be some decisions to make, and we'll get into Johnny Peralta and things later. But, mm-hmm. you know, that seems to be the next time a decision point's going to come is whenever Johnny Peralta is ready to come back off the disabled list. You know, then what do you do? Because the Cardinals were lucky enough, if you want to say it, to be able to avoid the Tyler Lyons issue by putting Peralta on the disabled list. They didn't have to make that final decision on somebody, but they're really probably not going to have that option when Peralta comes back. You know, they're going to have to release somebody because they're not going to send Matt Bowman down. He's got options. So it's either send Seven Secrets down to the minors and try to work something out, put Seven Curious just on the DL, or get rid of somebody like Broxton or Sokolovic. And, I know we've talked about it quite a number of times. It just feels like Broxton's the most likely. I think we feel, I think Broxton is a little bit better than we put him his reputation is. I mean, he has some stretches, but it's you're going to improve your bullpen when he's not out there. You can make a step up. He's the weak link, I feel like, even if he's a little bit better than people think. So I don't know. That decision probably a little ways off. We'll make it back to the pitching, but I wanted to transition a little bit to the offense. Looking at the results over the last 8 days, the Cardinals have scored 4 or more runs in each game since starting with that Brewer series. I mean, they went through the Brewer series, the Blue Jay series, and then against the Reds. You know, you're playing, again, you can argue about what kind of level of play that you're facing, but, you know, for a team that, swept the Pirates and scored 6 runs total, to see them putting up, to make the on-the-run folks have to deal with some 50-cent drinks is a kind of a nice thing. Is this an awakening for the offense, or is it just a kind of a good stretch and we're going to be back to puddling along here pretty soon?
A little mix of both. I think that they're finally starting to, when that weather starts warming up a little bit, the bats typically do as well. I think that may be some of it. I think I think some more of it is, just the buttons that are being pushed. I think that, Peralta being gone, and as much as we hate to keep just beating up on these guys, Jerko's answered the bell. Mm-hmm. And, he should be out there. He should play every day. That's been a big part of it. He shows a lot of power, and I mean, he's hit well, I think, all season. Garcia has too. Garcia seems to get on base. There just seems to be a higher comfort level at this point with the offense. I don't think that there was sawdust on their hands there for a little while. I think that's some of the defense too. I think that they're really pressing. So I felt like the offense was really pressing there for a little while, and seems to be kind of loosening up a little bit. Fowler hitting is going to be a big spark plug for them. I think that you start out with that first out a lot, and you start out with the first out on the strikeout. I read somewhere where he was almost in the 25-30% range of strikeouts, per plate appearance, and that's not good out of your leadoff guy, and that's not a kickstart. But now I think that we're kind of clearing that a little bit, and I think that they're all starting to hit. And at this point, you got to ride Jerko out as your cleanup guy until Piscotty can show that he's ready. I think with how I feel about Grichuk, you got to leave him in there. You're going to get a lot of strikeouts, but you're going to get some massive power, and it tied a game for you. So I think you're right. I think we'll probably go as much as they strike out. We're going to go through stretches where we're angry about the lineup. Mm. We're just like, these guys, what's the deal? And then we're going to go through something like this. I think it's 5, 6, maybe 7 straight games where they've had double digits in hits.
Yeah.
And, that's a sign of a good lineup.
Yeah, and you pointed out Dexter Fowler. I'd pulled up his numbers because over this stretch from the starting of the Milwaukee's beginning of the Milwaukee series through yesterday, he had one game out of that because of the only game he's missed this year. But other than the other 7, he's hitting .345 with an OPS of 1.032. He's got 2 homers. Again, we're not looking. I don't think anybody's looking to Dexter Fowler for the home runs. I mean, they're nice. That's not what people want to see. He did walk. He's walked 4 times, struck out 8 in that stretch, which is a little bit unbalanced, but better. I think that and we've talked about that. You know, the Cubs had that idea that he was the driver of the offense, and I think that's the case this year with the Cardinals. It's to some degree because he's the leadoff guy, but, if he can get going and Diaz and Carpenter can click a little bit behind him, suddenly that the rest of that lineup looks a little bit better when there's runners on. Like you said, if there's a whole lot of empty bases, then it's difficult to put runs together. So I've kind of always felt that if Dexter could get going, that things would look a lot better, and so far that seems to be the case.
Yeah, I think that if he continues to go at the clip that he's going right now, I think you're going to see a pretty quick turnaround from Diaz as well. He was the one that I really, really felt like you could see him putting the pressure on himself to make mm-hmm. things happen. Because last year, he very rarely struck out. And this year, he was really waving at pitches. Now, you know, scouting report may be out on something where he's vulnerable. But he looked really jumpy. And was in the strikeout, he was really chasing balls. So I'm hoping that Fowler hitting and getting on base relieves a little bit of the pressure from him, because he's going to be one of their spark plugs as well. So I'm hoping that all this kind of starts lining up. You know, Fowler gets going, Diaz gets going, and as we can see, Carpenter's getting on track a little bit. So even before the hot stretch that Fowler had, I wasn't super worried about it. I know there were some guys that were concerned about his lack of walks, but I really thought he was hitting balls on the screws and was getting really unlucky about it. So I think things start falling, and then, you know, well, here you go. You hit balls hard for, you know, a week and a half, and your biggest hit of the week is the squibber to the third to get on base, you know, to tie the game. You know, that's just kind of how the game works, and it's really funny watching Fowler play. I watched Fowler play when he was in Double A for the Rockies here in Tulsa, and he was like a gazelle. You know, he can move, and he can really move. You can tell how poor the Cardinals have ran bases the last couple of years when you see the things that Fowler can do. You know, he gets on base and he can make things happen. You're just like, well, you know, these Cardinals don't need to be running at all, you know, at some spots. And, you know, he makes it look really easy. So you're just like, well, hopefully there's a trickle down effect on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I've also seen Fowler, you know, there's at least one ball that I watched in the last week or so that I was like, oh, that's a double. And Fowler chased it down without too much trouble. So some of the defense he brings is a little bit too. I know that's not necessarily his. There was some idea that he was a little bit overrated in the defensive side. I think it's just the fact, like you say, it's comparison of what the Cardinals have had. But
yeah, 100%. Yeah. But, and I agree with you on that too. There's balls to where you're thinking, oh man, and he just glides under them mm-hmm. to where, you know, I think Grichuk's probably the best athlete on the team, but he struggled to get to some of those balls in the gap where Fowler makes it at being 6'5" and, you know, those long legs, he makes it look really easy to get to. He just kind of glides through the ball. I think that, you know, he's going to give them what they need defensively. So I agree with you on that. I think that, you know, he may not ever win a gold glove, but you can see where they were lacking, you know, to what they had.
Well, and I mean, that's just knowledge of the position, too. I mean, Grichuk has never been, you know, playing a lot of center field, even though he has the ability to do it. You know, there's some instincts and things that come into play with Fowler that work. But, yeah, I think you're right. You see him running the bases, and I mean, there was that play against, I think it was Tuesday night against the Blue Jays, where he, you know, heads up, tagged at second, went on to third on a ball that
was
not hit that deep, but the outfielder was out of position to plant his feet and throw, and nobody else would have done that. Nobody else would have done it and made it. Let's put it that way.
I think
Matt Carpenter probably would have been thinking about it and probably been tossed out, because that seems to be what Matt Carpenter does on the bases. But nobody else would have done it.
Aledmus is probably as equally as instinctual base runner as Fowler, but he you could just tell that I don't have him have confidence in him making that play right now.
No.
You know, so you're exactly right. I don't know how many other guys would have done it.
Yeah, it was interesting. So.
There was after the Carpenter grand slam the other night, it just kind of seemed like after those. I was going to get into this a little bit later, but I'll go ahead now. After the loss, the extra innings loss, where some of them looked like they didn't want to be there to the Blue Jays the other night, mm-hmm. and then after the first six innings of the first game of the doubleheader, which was almost equally as bad as the Sunday night game in New York, there seemed whenever Grichuk tied the game, it almost seemed like there was just a pressure valve release. And then they started getting on base. Then, of course, Carpenter knocks the run in. And then the look of the lineup in the second game, even with Adams at first, and I think this may be part of it, they really seemed loose. I thought the second game of the doubleheader, I thought they really looked like a different team and looked like a contending team. There was a ball back to base running where, I don't know if you saw it, but there was the ball that the Grichuk ball that just slightly got away from Votto on a bad throw. And for Votto to miss a ball, it's got to be terrible, because I think he's an elite defender. Well, it just gets a few steps away from Votto, and Grichuk goes ahead and takes second. And I was like, That's the kind of aggressive base running that I think they need to do, not the running into outs. You know, where Matheny said, we're stressing smart base running, but we want to be aggressive. Well, that turns into stupidity.
Yeah.
To where that Grichuk play right there, if Votto would have beat him by a few steps, we would have been angry. We would have been like, hey, at least he tried it. You know, that was the kind of aggression right there. And then what do you know? The next thing that happens is another reason they're playing well was Wong hit the double. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's really coming into his own. So they could be really tough to beat if all these things start falling into place. And I think they're really putting a lot of pressure on themselves defensively, base running, and even at the plate there for a little while, you could really see it.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of funny, it's maybe just me, but it kind of felt like the Carpenter Grand Slam was like the most anticlimactic Grand Slam I've ever seen, because, I mean, it was a 3-0 count, the bases were loaded, I mean, you knew, even the Cardinals, and I think the bases were loaded with nobody out, even if I remember, I mean, even the Cardinals were very unlikely to blow that whole situation, and you know, all he needs is a sack fly to win the ball game. And of course, it was obviously great to end it on a grand slam. I'm not going to argue with that, but it was a little bit. It's like it was kind of almost meaningless that it was a grand slam, but we'll take it, and it's nice. And you're right, maybe that did get people fired up and inspired about the weekend. The rest of the way, I don't know. Colton Wong is, though. I mean, if you look at Colton, I'm looking at his game log here. In his last five games that he's played, and I mean, he's had some days off in there, some. He's hitting .438 with three doubles and a triple, and five walks to three strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Colton on the season hitting .258, which doesn't sound like much, but I think is probably one of the higher marks on the team. And I know when Tara and I were talking on Sunday night, when we did a Gateway to Baseball Heaven, you know, I sorted it out, and I was very surprised to see that Wong was fourth on the team in OPS. He still is, and like I said, that's fourth on the team, but, you know, number one is Adam Wainwright. So factor him out because of the smaller at-bats and stuff. Wong's third, and he's played, and to give some credit, Mike Matheny keeps running him out there. Ever since, like you said, that meeting that John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny must have had after that New York series, it has lit it, you know, we haven't seen as many crazy lineups. We haven't seen as many, you know, Matt Adams hasn't been in the outfield. For whatever, however that was, whether it was just a discussion between the two of them about what needs to happen, if it was Mozeliak laying down the law, whatever the case may have been, however it was, it seems like you could really trace back the resurgence of this team back to that moment. Now, again, the schedule has helped as well, but they just look like a better team over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, they looked, that second game of the doubleheader, like what I was saying earlier, they just seemed loose, and it was the most cohesive the infield looked. And I worried a lot about it because I was thinking, okay, that's with Carp at third, and that's with Adams at first, who I honestly do think Adams is the superior defender to Carpenter at first base. And I really thought that they looked smooth. I'm going to give credit where it's due. I was shocked that Adams was not in the lineup last night after the three hits. And, you know, his pinch hit appearance in game one, he smoked the ball deep. And I thought, okay, well, he hit a ball hard last night right at somebody.
Yeah.
And, you could tell,
right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you could tell, you're just like, okay, he's starting to come around. I was surprised that after the three hits that Matheny didn't run him back out to first. And I got to give him a little bit of credit. Him not doing so, and him going back to what's got him there, that where they played better, playing Jericho. Jericho had two great plays in the home run last night, you know, and that's I think that everybody's kind of fallen into their spots now. So I think we're starting to figure a lot of those things out. He's going to be there every day. I mean, you know, at this point now, when he rests, it's going to be because he needs a rest, not because they're looking for, you know, a different matchup or trying to spark something. So that's it's pretty exciting to kind of see everything fall into place.
Yeah, and I mean, Wong's always been a streaky hitter, so there's going to be times where he's not going to hit. I know that, but it is good. I think he's gotten a lot of confidence over the last little bit. He's played fairly good defense too. I mean, I don't remember any plays that stand out, negative or positive. I mean, he made some interesting plays probably, but nothing right off the top of my head stands out either way, which is good. This is fine. I mean, you know, we don't want to see Colton losing ball games with his glove or anything. I don't know. I think that's, we've talked about the bullpen. Like you said, the starters are looking well, except for Martinez, who hopefully will come around. Wainwright, Wainwright still feels to me, I know that Mike Matheny, he sent him out there to, well, I think he made it all the way into the seventh inning on that doubleheader game against the Blue Jays, which seemed fairly insane at the time. It worked out, but I think a lot of people thought that was a dicey idea. Running him out there for the sixth seemed a little dicey, but trying to squeeze another out or two out of him. I know it was a doubleheader. I know you've got a bullpen that might be a little bit taxed, being that it had a extra inning game that day. But still, not what I would have done, but it worked out. It still feels to me, though, that Adam Wainwright right now is a five-inning pitcher. That's very, very scary, disconcerting. It's good that the back of the rotation is picking this up because, we talked about, pairing Martinez and a bounce-back Wainwright, and that's how this team was going to win. And Wainwright, if he can give you the quality start of three runs, six innings, I think that's going to be one of his better outings all year long, if that's the case. Because I just don't see him doing that very often.
Yeah, he's transformed as of right now into the fifth starter. Mm-hmm. And, if he can just keep you in the ball games and do what he's doing, I think that you're going to be fine. But yeah, it's the margin of error is really low in that situation. There's never any realization that this may be what he is. It's always like, well, he's searching for something, or he's doing this, or he's doing that. I don't know. I think we just got to come to grips with this is what we're going to get, and it's going to be scary, and we hope that he figures out how to control that cutter and not get it crushed and, one of those things to where then he's going to be Adam Wainwright. He's not going to be Cy Young candidate Adam Wainwright, but he's going to be a savvy veteran that's going to keep you into games. I just hope that, he can cut that down from giving up three runs to two runs and keeping him in the game and not being an issue to where it's, we're warming guys up, or, Matheny's warming guys up in the third and fourth inning.
Right. Yeah, you look at the game, look at that game against the Blue Jays that Wainwright pitched in, and he went up against a guy named Casey Lawrence, who I haven't heard of. I'm sure most National League fans haven't. Maybe, Blue Jay fans may know him, but my guess is he's a, kind of a fourth, fifth starter type. He went five innings, gave up 10 hits, gave up six runs, walked three, struck out one. You look at Wainwright's line of 6.1 innings, 9 hits, 4 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. It's better than his line, obviously, but there's not a significant gap that you would expect from a guy that you hope is your number mm-hmm. 2 versus a guy that's probably their number 5. You'd like to see a much wider gap to that. And those numbers, you could flip those lines and not be too surprised these days, and that says something about Wainwright. But again, he is a veteran. He is a guy that is adjusting to things, and maybe he will continue to adjust, but it feels like the days of seeing Wainwright going to the seventh or eighth inning are probably over. There may be one day he'll capture magic in the bottle one night and really have an efficient outing and get into the seventh or eighth on his merits. But it's not going to happen very often.
Well, like you say, the way that you just lined it up reminds me of John Lackey. Mm. That's the thing, is he's going to give up a few runs every start, but he's going to battle, and he's going to give you 7 innings, and he's going to keep you in the game. He's going to limit the damage. That's what I wish we could get out of Wainwright, like Lackey is now, not Lackey, the ace of the Cardinals in 2015. Like he is now, to where, he's probably, I don't think the Cubs' rotation is very good. And I think that they're going to rely on him a lot, and there may be a lot of chinks in the armor on that situation. But as far as a veteran that's going to go out and battle and get you innings, and he's going to give up some runs, he's going to give up some bombs, but he's going to keep you in the game, I wish that that Wainwright was at Lackey's level on that. Because if that were the case, they'd be an elite rotation.
All right, well, I think we've kind of hit on a lot of the actual games. Let's transition now to our segment, and we'll talk a little bit about the subjects and issues going around the Cardinals in up the middle.
Alisea, the second for one, the double play,
What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
All right, well, we'll get back to that Johnny Peralta topic a little bit here. Johnny Peralta, they kind of came out this week, had a story about it this weekend, where Peralta basically said he kind of got this infection and the medicine just sapped him and everything. They weaned him off of whatever, you know, whatever he was on. He's doing better. Probably go out for a rehab assignment here pretty soon. Now, you can take all that with a grain of salt, of course, because that's what this team is going to want you to believe, that there was some reason that Johnny Peralta was hitting badly. There is a point of view, though, that says, hey, look, this is a guy that had a pretty decent spring. I mean, he didn't hit any home runs, but he had some power, and looked like he might not be the, you know, the guy that they signed 4 years ago, but a contributor. And so for him to drop off immediately after the spring training seems to maybe give some weight to what the Cardinals are saying there. Are you buying that, or is this just their way of trying to maybe build up a little bit of hope on Johnny Peralta to maybe look to trade him if he has a decent rehab assignment?
Yeah, I feel like it was odd to me that he performed so well with the bat and looked like he had great movement and played a decent third base in spring, to where he came back to the player he was, you know, basically the last 2 years outside of injury. I don't know what you're going to get out of him. I'm not really confident he's going to have a bounce back. Putting him on this, they didn't say when. You notice they say it's getting close,
yeah,
where this cleans up, and then they're going to send him down for minor league games. Well, from the time they send him down, they're going to have a month to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Like you and I talked about, these things have a way of working themselves out. You know, they may need a bat before the end of that time and have to call him up. Say somebody gets, you know, dinged up, goes on that 10-day, and then they may need him. I don't know what the end game is. This is kind of a strange one to me. I don't think, for the things that he's done for the Cardinals, and he's been a great signing, I don't know. I'm sure they're kicking the tires with other teams to try to get him into a situation to where he can DH, maybe play some third for somebody and go and prolong his career. I think a DFA is going to be the worst case scenario. And I think it's one of those to where they're going to word it. They're never going to embarrass anybody. Right. If you notice that with the Cardinals management, they're never going to embarrass anybody. So I think that they're going to do everything they can to try to find him playing time somewhere, or they're going to come out, if they do release him, and just say, okay, we think he can find, you know, better. We want him to be able to choose where he plays next, you know, and say something like that. So, yeah. So I don't know. This is going to be a tough one. I kind of fall back on this, though. These things always figure themselves out. I just, like you and I talked about, I still think we see Peralta in a Cardinal uniform.
Yeah, I think we do, too. It's kind of like the saying from what Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, where life finds a way, baseball finds a way as well at times, and that does seem to sort out. I mean, we're talking about you know, how he gets back on the roster. We'll get to that in a minute. I do want to say, I pulled up the spring training stats, and he hit .261 in the spring, had a .709 OPS, which, again, is not a world beater, but is still a contributor. And he did lead the team in doubles, six doubles and a triple. Didn't get any home runs, but you know, definitely looked better in spring than he did once the bell rang. And you can argue, you can determine whether that's, you know, the injury, the health issues, or if it was facing a little bit different pitching. You know, that's a different story. But when Peralta is ready, you know, there has to be it. You know, you got to get rid of a pitcher, right? Or does that maybe make an impetus for John Jose to try to make some sort of moves? Even if it's not Peralta, maybe it's a different type of trade to get him on the roster. It feels like it's just got to be either DFA or a Kevin Seacrest issue, right?
Yeah, I would fall back immediately on the Seacrest deal, because I've preached that for a month now, to where I keep thinking that he's going to go. I said phantom DL forever to try to get some stuff figured out, to where I'm not so certain that a real DL stint may not be the best situation. I don't think he's healthy. I think there's probably a lot of fatigue, but there may be other issues as well. But I don't know if they're going to be able to do that by limiting Rosenthal. I think that situation is going to have to shake out to where there's more confidence in throwing him back-to-back days, because I think you're going to have to carry that extra pitcher to accommodate, you know, not being able to throw him in consecutive outings or consecutive ball games. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. You know, I think there's a lot. The wheel's definitely spinning on something to happen. So I think the Cardinals are going to buy as much time as they can to figure that out, and that's why they're going to probably put him on the send him to the rehab stand, probably send him to extended. I would bet it starts in extended spring training, and then he works his way up through the minor league system whenever, you know, whoever's home, you know, to make it up for those 30 games. But, you know, I don't think it'll be 30 days before we see him again. But to answer your question, I just don't know. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And until we see that Rosenthal can go back-to-back, I think they're going to have to keep that extra pitcher, and that becomes a scary situation for somebody. You know, it's one of those where we know that he's hit his way on the lineup. He's still playing pretty well, but are we seeing the end of Jose Martinez? You know, will that be the next thing that happens? I know that does not help your outfield situation, you know, but, you know, when is this going to happen? Now, I will say this, though. I said that all year about Hazelbaker last year. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, oh, this runs over. Well, he was on the roster at the end of the year, and he's one of those guys you had confidence playing the outfield. So, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting up through Memorial Day about how this is going to work.
Yeah, and it feels like that, again, you kind of get into the bullpen usage of Matheny. And this goes back a long way, because you'd always – but that long man that they have, and this time right now it is Tyler Lyons, they never really know how to use him. I mean, there's mm-hmm. that idea that you want to save him for those games where the starter can't get through the third inning. But then if the starting pitchers are going well, which, you know, right now for the most part they are, these guys never get in. Again, Tyler Lyons pitched – and I'm not hyping on Lyons entirely because he's the patron pitcher of the blog, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, I got you.
It's one of the reasons I'm probably looking at him more than in maybe some others. But,
I like Lyons. I mean, he's an Oklahoma State guy. That's a big name here in Oklahoma. You know, that's I like Lyons.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. That spot seems to rot. You know, you can get a Carlos Villanueva to come in and convince him to be that six starter long man and be out there. Well, he's a veteran that's successful. You know, Lyons is out there, you know, twiddling his thumbs.
Well, and and that's the thing, you know, they used Villanueva, because Villanueva had been a starter, but he had already converted, I think, to the, you know, 2-3 inning type of role.
Yeah.
But we also saw it with Joe Kelly. We've seen it with some others, that those guys just, they don't get a lot of time work. And so when they do get a chance to pitch, they're not necessarily at their best. I mean, Rosenthal, mm-hmm. like I said, Lyons pitched in the first game of the doubleheader, and I didn't get to see it, but saw, you know, he gave up a run on a couple of hits. Again, though, you know, the idea of him not coming up from Memphis, of pitching as much as Memphis as he did, was to make sure he had the feel and stuff on his pitches. That feel is probably lost somewhat by sitting for a week. So you got to, if you're willing to use him, even in a situation where he pitches two innings every two or three days, or at least is available to do that, then you can get by with, I think, not having one other pitcher. But even and be able to work around Rosenthal and all, but it's going to take a little bit more, you know, really thinking it out, or some creativity, or being willing to let the bullpen absorb a bad loss because you've used Tyler Lyons the night before. And that may happen. I mean, but, you know, because the odds are they're not using those long starters until it's a game that they've already lost anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a game where the starters come out and give it up seven runs in two innings, and you can win that game, but you're probably not. And so, you know, maybe it's where you throw, you know, you can get Lyons back out there for an inning or two. Maybe it's just a game where, you know, somebody runs out there and throws a lot of innings. I mean, Bowen's been a starter before. If he wasn't pitching every other day, you'd say him. You know, Sokolovich, we saw him, you know, against the Blue Jays, went two and a third, two thirds, which he's gone two innings a lot in his career in St. Louis. He's a guy that can do that. So I think you could piece it together for the rare times that you're going to have to deal with that. So I think if you allow yourself to free up the long man spot, which Lyons is holding right now, you've got a better chance of being able to adjust to whatever you have, and wins probably a lot more games than you're going to lose that way. But we'll see if that happens. Because it feels wrong to me, it always does, when you carry more pitchers than hitters. You know, I grew up, as you did, in that era. Of course, we grew up in the 24-man roster period, too. But even after it shifted to 25, I feel like it was always 14 hitters to 11 pitchers. I mean, that just felt like that was the normal split, you know? And then lately it's come to 13 and 12, and now the Cardinals are going right now with 12 hitters and 13 pitchers. And I know that's somewhat a function of how the game is, but it just feels like that really kind of limits you offensively, too. I mean, that's which may be a good thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe what this team needs right now is less options, but it just feels wrong to me to see that split like that.
Yeah, that's well said. It seems like that role to where it makes a lot of sense to have that guy that's going to come in and eat innings. It almost turns into the mop-up role to where you see with Broxton.
Yeah.
You know, and it's I know at least two different occasions with Lyons. He was dealt a bad hand, because since he's been back up on two different occasions, they've got him up twice to warm up and didn't bring him in. And that's frustrating. You know, that's no one's going to stay sharp on that.
Sure. And that was the I think it was even it was that first game against the Blue Jays, which went back and bit them, because you know they warmed up Lyons right before in the sixth or seventh. They were warming him up. He was going to come in for the eighth, it looked like, until Jose Martinez hit the tying home run, and then they went to Sechrist. Which, you know, again, worked out, surprisingly. I mean, almost didn't. But, you know, that just felt like, why not go ahead? He's warmed up, bring him in. And if it does go long, I mean, you know, he can pitch a couple of innings, and then you turn it over to somebody else. He could go three innings if you needed to. And instead, they went to Sechrist, and they went to Cecil, and they had to go to, you know, and Cecil only got one out. And then Sokolovic had to do the heavy lifting. But that was a situation that it was like, you know, if he was good enough to come in two down, why not use a guy in a tie game, because you may need extra innings. I don't know. Again, especially when you've got Broxton and O and Rosenthal unavailable, it seems very strange to not use a guy that could give you innings. But
you're exactly right. I mean, you'd think that whenever it came out that those guys were unavailable, you're just like, well, from me personally, it would make sense to plan for multiple innings on every guy. Mm-hmm. If you're down three arms, this did not make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So anyway, I think you're right. I think we'll see Peralta again. It would not be I would not rule out that a good rehab assignment. If he really looks like he's something, then Mo might go ahead and trade him as that's wrapping up, because it does feel like, as you said, Jed Jerko's got that third base spot for right now. Now, in a month when Peralta's ready to come back, you know, could Jerko have slid off some? Maybe. It can, you know, but it feels like Jerko and Garcia together can solve that problem at least for a while. And so perhaps Mo, instead of trying to find a way to get Peralta on the roster for a while, goes ahead and trades him. But I think for the most part, you're right. We're going to see him back. I'm going to cross my fingers and knock on wood, but it feels like the team and the Matheny and the Mozeliak that we've seen the last 2 weeks, I don't know that Johnny Peralta goes right back into the starting lineup. And I know a lot of people are concerned about that. A lot of people have that fear that, you know, as soon as Peralta comes back, he's going to be this terrible guy, and they're going to put him in the bullpen, in the lineup every day anyway, because he's a Matheny guy, and, you know, he's a veteran, and he's going to be there. I don't think that that's the case. Now, he will get some starts probably to start out with, maybe to somewhat showcase him, but I feel like, you know, especially if the team is still clicking like it is this week's, you're going to see Jed Jerko out for most of the time. You know, Peralta will start sometime. And that's, as we saw this kind of debate with Adams, if a guy's on the roster, he needs to start every once in a while. He needs to get some time. So I think we'll see that with Peralta, but I don't think that they're going to rely on Peralta to be that everyday presence anymore.
No, yeah, I think that the writing was on the wall for that. I thought it was really funny that after Mozeliak came out on that Monday and said, well, you know, he's on a short leash at this point. Well, he hadn't played since then.
Yeah.
You know, since that was said. You know, I understand that he, you know, he was sick. And there was issues, and that's what we were being told. And I he probably was. There's no doubt about that. But I do think it's funny that that happened right after. We didn't hear anything about him feeling ill until Mozeliak came out and said that. I agree with you. I don't think he comes back as your starting third baseman. I think that the pieces are falling into place. I think that you know, he could have hit his way onto the lineup and play. You know, he could have earned that spot in spring and basically did. But you know, now he's reverted back to the Peralta we've seen the last you know, 2.5 years basically. And I don't think that that's a concern. That he's going to take playing time away from somebody that has earned it.
We're talking a lot about third base. It does feel like, and I know Derek Gould has pointed this out a lot, that the person that started at third, Peralta, and this person that's playing third now, which is Jerko, may not be the person, either of the people that are playing third base, come August. It really feels like the Cardinals have an opportunity to upgrade at third base, and there are a number of options to do that. As I watch, just to make sure the lights aren't going to go out on me.
I heard that. Yeah. I heard that thunder in the background. Yeah, you're getting what we've had all day.
I was about to say, both Alan and I, Alan has been dealing with rain all weekend long, and it's supposed to have come here most of this weekend. It hasn't until, of course, about the time it is to record this show. So if we have to put it back together after a power outage, we'll find out and see. We'll see if we can do it smoothly. But anyway, it feels like there's a lot of options at third base. And it feels like the Cardinals, I don't know, it just feels more and more likely that the Cardinals are going to do something there. Don't you think? I mean, there's so many different chances that's just the way for this team to find that thumper.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a lot of smoke right now on some names. I thought Donaldson coming into town and that article being written right before they came into town, I thought was a pretty big clue. Like you and I talked about, there's a lot of industry talk that Frazier will be a Cardinal at some point. And you know, you're going to hear a lot of knocks that I like the fact that, you know, you're going to bring in a 30 home run guy. You know, that's I like Frazier. I know a lot of guys don't. I think that him coming back to the NL Central would be pretty big. At this point, is any rental better than Jerko, though? You know, that's kind of what – that's my worry. I think they do improve in the infield somewhere. I think that they've built up to where they are going to be ready to pounce on a deal at some point this year. I think that the plan all along was, to, hey, let's be in the wild card hunt, see where we are – and improve where we need to. You know, they're going to go get a bullpen piece. They do it every year before the deadline or even after the deadline. You know, they brought in several high-profile arms after when a player that has to pass through waivers. You're not going to see the infield cleared up that way, I don't think. But I do think they're going to be players on somebody. I haven't ruled out the – people may hate me for this one. I haven't ruled out the idea of they may be bringing in a shortstop and shifting Diaz. I think that – do you get the feeling that I think that they realize now that they've got an offense for a shortstop. I'm not so sure that he's going to remain at shortstop. I've heard a lot of talk that he may not remain on that side of the infield. So that's probably down the line. But I do think they're going to improve in the infield somewhere, and I think that if they're going to strike, third base is obvious. But as we've talked before, sometimes they can incrementally improve, and that could be a shift they look at making.
And that's true. It's very possible. The only thing I would say is, you know, we have discussed before, and a lot of people have, that this team has a lot of complementary parts, doesn't have that one key guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe Matt Carpenter's the closest to that, but I don't even think that that's quite there. I think that Carp's a very, very good guy, but I don't know that he's necessarily that superstar. As I was listening to Derek Gould's, I think, most recent podcast, talking about there's no fear factor there. There's nobody that the Cardinals, you know, that really strikes fear in the opponent's hearts. You know, Carpenter may get them worried, but I don't know that they fear him. And so getting a guy that can cause that angst, if you will, really worry, make people worry even before they get into town, like Albert Pujols used to do, maybe like Matt Holliday did in his prime. That lineup in the MV3 when you had Roland and Pujols and Edmonds, and you wonder how they ever lost a game when you think back about it. To do that, to get that kind of guy right now, I don't think they can get him at shortstop. Because, I mean, it would cost an arm, three legs, and five hands or something of that nature. Maybe in a couple of years when Manny Machado comes free, available, and they can get him, you know, he could move over to short. You know, maybe that's how they do that. That's way down the line, if anything.
Yeah.
But with the idea now, especially, like you said, Donaldson, Frazier, we'll jump right in here. This is a Twitter question, but we'll tie it in right now from Traveritops, Tito over there at Redbird Rants, writing at Redbird Rants. He pretty much put him out there. Evan Longoria, Donaldson, or Frazier, who do you want? Those are three guys that have a pretty good track record or a pretty good pedigree. I know you were saying there that you're more of a Frazier guy than some. Does that put him at the top of that list?
No. If you were to make me list those guys of want that I would want, Longoria is at the top. I say Frazier just because I don't think I think he'll come back to the National League at some point. Mm-hmm. And two, he's not going to finish the season as a White Sox. Mm-hmm. Naturally, I would always say this too. I would love to have Donaldson as well. You know, he's a spark plug. He would be the one that you would think would make the most would make the most sense with his contract. You know, he's still got, you know, that you'd have him for a year and a half. The one thing that gets me though, and this is maybe thinking way outside the box, but you know, Mozeliak last year made the comment. He goes, "We may have to look at things to get out of our comfort zone." Well, if you remember, they used to never trade for guys in their walk years, yeah, ever. You know, we don't want a rental. Well, is that what getting out of your comfort zone is? Or will they maybe look at doing something like that now? You know, that's the one thing where I think there a lot of the stars align for Frazier in the fact that he's a National League player. He's not going to be a White Sox. And you know, one of the things that I always harp on, and I know that you agree with me on this, former trade partners. You know, they've made deals with the White Sox before with Hahn and with Williams. And sometimes I really think those things make a big difference. So, I don't know. As far as want, I would go probably Longoria, Donaldson, Frazier. As far as, you know, what I think is reality, I'd probably go Frazier, Donaldson, Longoria.
See, I would want Donaldson, I think. I'm looking at the OPS Plus over the last 3 years, and, you know, Frazier's at OPS, and again, that's not, you know, maybe not the be-all, end-all, but I think it's pretty interesting because, you know, 100 is average. Frazier's at 117, 108, and then this year he's at 75. He's off to a slow start, but you factor that in. Longoria over the last 3 years, 112, 126, and now this year 108. Donaldson is 151, 153, and now this year 181, although on the DL right now. I think he's just got more overall. I mean, you look at his average, you look at his overall power. I like Frazier's, you know, Frazier's going to have that pop. He will give you that. But there's a lot of strikeouts and a lot of sure, low average possibilities. Maybe coming to the National League, back to the National League will help. And I will say that Frazier would cost you a little less, the least in prospects, if that's what factors in. They're not going to get a huge haul for him, I don't think. I haven't looked at his contract, but you're saying he's up at the end of the year?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, yeah, they're not going to be able to hold out for just a ton for a guy that's in a walk year. So you could get him for cheaper. Donaldson, although I think the Blue Jays are really going to have to look at this because I don't know what his contract is, but I've got the idea. If I'm right, he goes through the end of 2018. You'd have him for this year next.
His arbitration runs out in 18, where Frazier's ran out this year, but they bought Frazier last year out.
Right.
And they did the same thing with Donaldson, but Donaldson's cheap. I think Donaldson's only 23 or 24, you know, cheap in baseball terms.
Right. I think that, I mean, also, you talk about former trade partners. Moe's traded with the Blue Jays before. Did a pretty decent deal in 2011, if most people remember.
Well, and even more so on that, keep in mind, one of the trade partners they had that they used to work on something every year is Cleveland and Shapiro, who now runs Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, so that's familiarity is there, definitely.
It does help. And, you know, just I look at this, and again, I've always had this idea that the Cardinals are going to make a major play for Manny Machado, and whether that's true or not, I feel like they're at least going to be in that conversation. But the idea, you know, Manny Machado doesn't end up until 2018 as well, becoming a free agent. So no matter what you do, you still have that stopgap. Donaldson would at least give you the opportunity. He would cover that hole of time. I mean, if you could have Donaldson for the rest of this year and all of next year, that's big. I mean, again, you're going to have to work about the finances a little bit. Maybe the Blue Jays pay some of the salary depending on the prospects that you give them, stuff like that.
And you're exactly right on that. And I think that the Cardinals have stockpiled so much right now that I don't think any contract is too big for them to get. I think that they're really, you know, think about all the money they offered for. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, my iPad almost acted like it just went out. I'm sorry.
Nope.
Think about all the money they offered for Hayward, and that was the same time as Scherzer. Am I correct on that?
Price.
I think it was the same year.
Price.
So they've got money to play with, so in bringing any contract on, I don't think that's going to be. I don't think that's going to hurt them, and I think it may be a situation where, back to the comfort zone comment, they haven't gotten anybody after that first tier guy that has said no. You know, they've got complimentary guys after that. You know, Fowler was one that you could tell was probably the most perfect match of any free agent, you know, search that we've had in recent years. They've got money to spend on some contract. So I think they could take anything, and hopefully they can take that whole contract and not to give away one of the studs, you know, on the farm.
Right. And again, as from the business side of things, and I think that Derek has made this point maybe in a chat, the no-shows at the end of the year last year probably got the attention of the business side, because they've kind of made that model of 3.4 million people coming through the gates is kind of their baseline. I remember just a few years ago it was just 3 million, but you know, as the Cardinals continually draw 3.2, 3.3, 3.4, whatever they're drawing, they're expecting that. And if they're not getting that, that's a problem. Now, again, with the slow start, they was concerning. They've kind of bounced back. But if you could go out and get a guy like Donaldson, and any of these guys, I think Longoria, in my mind, I mean, one, I feel like Longoria's older. He's exactly the same age as the other two. I think that because Longoria's been around for eons. He came up as a teenager, it feels like.
Yeah.
It was something like that. But Longoria is also the face of the Rays. I mean, he is the Rays guy, and I feel like it's going to cost maybe more than he's worth, and he's worth quite a bit, to get him pried away from the Rays. I don't think they're going to be looking to get rid of him because of that tie. You know, they've got enough problems with attendance and things like that as it is. To lose the face of their franchise, I mean, there's some PR issues in there. If you can get a guy like Donaldson to just, you know, keep up, I mean, just to be there for the next year and a half, that sells a lot of tickets, too, I think. I mean, because he brings, I mean, can you imagine him hitting after, you know, Fowler and Carpenter and maybe even Diaz? I mean, if you put him in the fourth spot with guys on all the time and a guy that can hit, I mean, and we're not talking about just the knock on Frazier is just that hitter, you know, all or nothing type of guy. You know, Donaldson's a guy that can hit some doubles, that can, you know, drive in a run from third with the sack fly. With, you know, he could do a lot of different things. So that's where I would lean. And again, you're right. They've got the idea. They got the prospects to do this. I know you and I have talked about the fact I really don't think that Harrison Bader makes his debut with the Cardinals. I think that he gets shipped out somewhere. And that may be part of the deal. I mean, and, you know, there's some idea, you know, as much as the club talks about keeping Carson Kelly, you know, it's possible that with Yadier Molina's extension, they'll go ahead and ship him too. And if you put those two guys with, a starting pitching prospect, I mean, if Luke Weaver comes off the DL and shows something, you know, are those three enough to get a player? I don't know. I'm not real good at this, but it feels to me that that's a significant possibility for a team like Toronto that may feel they need to rebuild because they expected to be a playoff team this year, and they're obviously not going to be.
No, yeah, and they really look disjointed as a team. I don't know. I've heard that clubhouse dynamic though is strange there. Really? I'd heard that, and you don't hear the chemistry issue, and the guy's going to beat me up all over that. But they don't seem to be going anywhere, and it would, you know, a lot of the signs point to where that would make a lot of sense, you know, to where a deal could happen. And like I said, I'm not good at that either, about what it would take to get him. I mean, you could throw some names out there, and it may not be even names that we're interested in. I do know that a lot of people look at the Cardinals organization as being deep in pitching. So you'd think that that would have to be some of the return.
Yeah, you would think so. I know the Cardinals don't tend to like to give that up. But then, on the flip side, if they for some reason do decide to get engaged with Lance Lynn on an contract extension, which is something I'm not real sure about, again, because it does feel like the rotation is so locked in that it does becomes difficult. I mean, you know, assuming Mike Wacha has a very good year this year, assuming everybody stays healthy, which is, again, a big assumption, you still have Adam Wainwright under control for one more year. Where does Alex Reyes fit in next year? Where does, you know, if you keep him around, where does Luke Weaver fit in? Where does Sandy Alcantara fill it in a year or so when he could, you know, is he going to start out in the bullpen? But, you know, I figure if he eventually he's going to be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be room for these guys. And
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I get the feeling with Alcantara, however you say his name, that we will see him in St. Louis this year in a bullpen role.
Right.
And I bet we'll see that in the next year to two, kind of like the Carlos Martinez situation.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of feel that's the way that he's being tracked on that. You know, as far as the Reyes deals goes, I mean, yeah, there's something about Lynn, and my buddy would say, man, you say this every year. There's something about Lynn that just fits the Cardinals mold.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, and that's the thing, is he's going to get some major money somewhere. I just think that the Cardinals can take on the contract. And I think there is enough room to fit. I know that you and I had talked about that before, that where there may be a log jam where that, you know, you don't rush Reyes back. And, you know, yeah, you give Weaver another year. I mean, Weaver hadn't thrown a minor league pitch yet, has he? I know that he may have started, but he's DL'd right now. So, yeah. You know, I don't know how much you can trust those guys, and, you know, in Lynn's a proven quality. So, I don't know. We're putting the cart before the horse as well, too. I think that those are conversations that are probably going to happen around the break when he proves that he's healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, there are pros and cons for sure. Well, let's go ahead. We've been at this for a while, and we do not have a minor league report this time. Kyle was busy with work and unavailable to record anything. I would point out that he did get his weekly prospects done over at the Redbird Daily, so go check those out and see who he had as players of the week at each position. We'll be find interesting to know that Harrison Bader was the hitter of the week in Memphis, so maybe he's building that trade profile up a little bit. But let's go ahead and shift into our last segment of Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right, Twitter questions. We've got a lot of them. We've talked about a little bit of them because a number of them kind of tied into Peralta. Like I said, we mentioned the one from Triveratops. Let's see. Let me kind of scroll through here real quick. Brendan Schaefer asked us what should happen with Peralta, and I think that we've kind of covered that as well. Let's see. I think that's – we'll hit some of these. You know, Scott – Texas Card fan, he always piles us up with a few of them. we'll go with this. We're not going to answer all of his because, but I think that's, and he asked about Broxton. Would he be around till in May on a Cardinals uniform? I think we've kind of addressed some of that as well. Just because, both of us kind of the indication he's not going to be around, but we'll see. His first question though is,
that's only a week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
well, yeah, by May, like, if he's going to be, he'll be there by May because that's Monday. But by the end of May, that's a different story. And I don't know that he will. True or false, Mozeliak knows more about lineup construction than Matheny. Go ahead. I'll let you answer that one.
I think Mozeliak goes through the analytical portion of it better. I think he came in and said, okay, this is going to be your optimal lineup. Which leads to a bigger question. This could go a bunch of different ways. I did find it very odd that they had Carpenter hitting second in the game that he was going to get suspended, and then we haven't seen it since. I don't know. Yeah. I think that in this, go ahead and elaborate on that one a little bit more if you want to.
Well, that was weird, and I've pointed it out on Twitter today that, you know, it was almost, and I didn't, you know, we said it at the time, it was almost like Mike Matheny was kind of trolling us, knowing that Carpenter wasn't going to play, so he put that lineup out there that everybody's talked about since Dexter Fowler signed, that's going to be it, and then all of a sudden he doesn't use it. Now, you know, and I mentioned it, and the guys from the Two Birds on the Bat podcast pointed out that, hey, you know, the Cardinals are 9-2 over the stretch. They're, you know, the offense is going fairly well. Maybe that Mike said, if it wasn't broke, don't fix it. But it's still just kind of strange to see that lineup pop out there and then never actually get used later on.
Yeah. I don't think that I'm watching. I got my MLB.TV on, and I just want to throw something out. The Dodgers were down 5-2 going into the ninth, and they just went back-to-back-to-back to tie it without giving up an out. Yeah, it's nice. Crazy. I mean, the place is going nuts. But it was very odd, and it was really funny because I didn't think Carpenter really looked out of sorts in Milwaukee. And me and some of the Red Bird Daily guys were talking. I said, I think they may start moving him closer to the top of the lineup for comfort to see more pitches, hit behind Fowler, you know, get him to the top, just kind of shake some things up. Where I was worried, I didn't mind that being the lineup to start the season. I just didn't want Diaz to be buried. Well, I think Diaz has showed with his extra base hits and his power that he could probably fill that three spot pretty easy at this point. So I was glad when they made that move.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, this makes a lot of sense. So, you know, to see it never happen was kind of disappointing, but, you know, can't argue with the results. But as far as back to the question, I don't think that Mozeliak is making the lineup out. I think that was probably some of the choices that, like, hey, let's try to optimize what we have going here. And that may not even come from Mo. That may be coming from the analytical department, and they may be working on that just to kind of do a kickstart. I don't think that they're the type of organization to not trust their manager, for better or worse, at this point. You know what I mean? Mm. So I don't think that that's the case. But do I think that he has the capability to do it as well as Matheny? I would say yes.
Yeah, we've always said that Matheny was not hired to be tactical, but he does have 6 years or 5+ years now of experience in the job. And, you know, everybody gives Matheny a lot of grief about changing lineups, and I think that's somewhat fair. But we do forget Tony La Russa changed lineups every freaking day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was 1 year I think he had 155 different lineups in 162 season. I think that's what I remember. I mean, And I will say, and I have thought this to some degree, that Mike Matheny, you know, he saw what Tony La Russa was doing, and he's kind of imitating that, but not with the full knowledge of why Tony did it. I mean, Tony really was looking for any edge that he could get. Matheny just kind of seems to be looking for the hot hand. And again, you know, Tony had Albert Pujols locked in that one spot, and Matheny doesn't have that kind of guy.
Yeah, that's and I think that's a big part of it. You're right. I'm sure he probably did see that of, hey, let's just try to spark where I think it's been a detriment to some of the young guys, to where it's just the constant moving parts to where they haven't had a chance to truly play, to truly hit, and to become the players that they're capable of becoming. That's why they came up. You know, I think that it's kind of kind of halted their growth a little bit.
Got a question from Tyler's opinion, and that's Tyler underscore opinion on Twitter. What's the Cardinals' true level of talent? That's a tough question. I think it's much closer to what we've seen over the last 2 weeks than we saw the first couple of weeks. I mean, this is a team that we thought could win 90 games, and the way they're playing over the last few weeks, I don't think we can rule that out. I think that you could easily say that even if Mo doesn't make a move, their talent level is still at that 88, 89, 90 win level.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is a tough question to answer, just because if you would have said anything in that first 12-game start, I mean, to be honest, this is tough to say, he hit, but defensively, Molina was as bad defensively as anybody else in the team during that stretch. There was a ton of pass balls, ton of just not smart plays, you know, one of those type of situations, and we know that's not the case. I think that the game is so mental that I think the upside on the team is very high. But I agree with you, the margin of error is low because they don't have that many superstars.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, we've got a question from Ben Kelly, Beefcake 5, who contributes quite often, and he asks if we will see more Carp at third base. I think we will not see Carpenter there very often, as we've said. Jerko seems to be doing well. But I think there will be occasional times where they want to get Matt Adams in the lineup, and this is a day where maybe a pitcher on the mound that doesn't handle lefties very well, they'll move Carpenter over there a little bit more often and get Adams in the lineup. At least until, we discuss a trade. If they ever traded for a big guy, obviously that's done. But if it's with the current talent that they have, it seems to me that I don't think it's going to happen very often, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, three or four times a month.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, it's easy to say now since they're finally winning, mm-hmm. but I think that the pieces are falling into place about how they want to use guys. Adams is going to have to play first a little bit. I kind of like to have Adams play first a little bit, but you've got to play his hot streaks. So I don't think it's going to be much. I don't think that you'll see that happen very often. And Matheny's been known to pull his big bats for defensive purposes at some inopportune times. So we'll probably see that a little bit more. But I don't think it's going to be a common occurrence, but I don't think this will be the last time we see him at third either.
No, and again, you're right. There can be some times that you might see that Adams comes in to play first base in late innings, 7th, 8th, 9th, because Carpenter's kind of iffy at first base at times. We've seen that. And Matt Adams, I know a couple nights ago, it was the day that Carpenter was suspended and Adams played, and everybody was griping about it. And he went 0-for-2 with a walk and a strikeout and misplayed a ball at first, and it's like, mm-hmm. man, if any night for you to do this, this is not the night. But for the most part, Adams is a very, very good defender at first base, or I've felt that he's a very, very solid defender. I don't know if maybe very, very good is an overstatement, but a very solid defender, probably the best first baseman defensively on the team. So, maybe there are some situations where Carpenter shifts over to third in the late innings and Adams plays first, especially with the double switch that works out. I don't know. We might see that, maybe not. But, we're just not going to see a lot of Carpenter at third, especially if a trade gets made.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, last question is from Cassie, PinkDaisy08. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit. Maybe a little bit more in depth here. Any new thoughts on Segrist? Seems like they're still concerned, but the past two outings have been fine. Are they ignoring his issues? The club is not ignoring anything with you can argue about Mike Matheny and what he's paying attention to. I'll tell you, John Mozeliak knows exactly what the situation is with Kevin Segrist. He's got that figured out now. Or at least knows all that he can know about it. Is this one of those situations where Segrist isn't telling the team that he's hurt? We've seen that quite a bit with the Cardinals, so that's not can't rule that out. I feel like they're not ignoring him, but they're going to pitch him until they really have a clue. And that's the problem is, as erratic as Segrist has been, that means that he's been pretty good at times, too. And so you kind of still want to see if you can catch that lightning, see if you're going to get the good one or the bad one, and you just don't know until he gets out there.
Exactly. Well, and I think last night you saw, you went Sokolovic, Segrist, oh. You went 0 for an out in the eighth inning, and that was you didn't want to have to do that when you were up 7-1. But with it being 7-1, I thought it was telling that those were the arm combinations that we saw. You know, if that tells you anything, I think they're just like, hey, you're going to figure this out in a three, which turned out to be it was a three-run game, am I correct, or was it a four-run game whenever Segrist came in? I can't remember. But yeah, it was one of those two where if let's put it this way, if the inning would have started 7-5, we wouldn't have seen him yesterday.
Yeah.
So that I think that they're just trying to figure this out, figure out where he fits. But, 90 miles per hour at the big league level, and yeah, it's going to get tattooed. And he has those reverse splits to where he's not a lefty specialist. He pitches better to righties. There's really not – until he can regain his old form, there's not going to be much of a spot. And I think I kind of lose. He hasn't done anything to win me over yet. He needs to get back to his strikeout performances and stuff like that, and bring that velocity back up to for me to think that he's not a DL stint at some point.
Yeah, I mean that's he has his last three outing. He's not been charged with a run, but that counts. Last night where he put runners on and didn't even get them out.
That's true. It was 7-5 with Sokolovic.
Right. I mean, there are times where he looks like he's more like the one he has. I mean, but he's 11 walks in eight and a third innings. Now, it's gotten better than it was, but it's still a little shaky, especially when you're facing a little bit lesser competition. I think that they're gonna do as much as they can with him, but they're monitoring him. I don't doubt that. Sometimes we see them. And we don't. Again, we never know what's all going on in the clubhouse and things of that nature. But I feel like they at least have a feeling about what's going on with Segrist, and they have a plan for him. But again, if he's not telling them everything, that plan may not be as effective as they'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Do want to point out, we don't deviate from the Cardinals much on this show, and I don't want to start now, but I do think it's kind of interesting. Maybe we'll talk about a couple of former Cardinals. I see the Pirates have placed David Freese on the disabled list, which is just another blow to the Pirates. And you got to figure they're going to, you lose Marte for 80 games. You don't even get to have Young on the team because he can't get out of Korea. And now, Freeze, who was doing well, goes on the DL. I don't know if it's going to be very long, but still, that's just another shot to them. And then Shelby Miller, having to have Tommy John surgery, just found that out today. That's tough. I mean, from what I could tell, Miller was kind of figuring it out in Arizona after a terrible year last year. You hate to see that, but unfortunately, with pitchers, that just seems to be coming all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. I feel bad for those guys. We don't live in a world where I'll ever cheer against David Freese. What I'm saying? Right. It's one of those stuff. I just can't do it, so I feel bad for him just to get on track, because I was glad that he was, the circumstances of where he got the starting third base job was kind of iffy, but, don't drink and drive, bottom line. The article this week kind of shines a brighter light on Freeze. We had heard those rumblings of drinking problems, and he lost out on a promotion, in the minors. I remember that because he couldn't control himself. So, it works in mysterious ways a lot of times. So, he was able to come out with that story, and I think that may have even been prompted by the fact that that Kong may never make it back over here.
Yeah.
One of those things. And then Miller, you feel bad for him. I was going to bring up Miller before we even brought up the injury issues of that long man spot. That's one of those situations to where under Matheny that long roll has never worked out. Look, Miller didn't even get in a game in that playoff, and Waka did, and it cost him.
Right. Yeah. Playoffs especially been terrible for that long man. And then it's not a Cardinal, but it's is Adam Eaton.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. Yeah,
you know, lots of prospects went the White Sox way, and then the Nationals aren't going to get anything out of it.
And it's really, I feel bad for the Nationals just because they seem like they were right on the cusp, and they've been like that for the last 4 or 5 years, to where, you know, they were just a few things going their way from being a complete World Series contender. They now are missing their leadoff man, which is Spark, which they do have Turner, so yeah, that'll work out. But their bullpen's not very good, you know, so they're going to be players in the market. So that's going to be interesting to see how that goes, and you know, the Eaton deal just kind of stinks. But I hate to be selfish about this, but just think of the injuries to them and to the Giants and everybody. I mean, the National League is up for grabs.
Yeah, I think that, I know they were talking about the Mets like last week, and it was like they had like 10 guys either on the DL or nursing injuries or things of that nature. And, you know,
they took a huge hit this weekend with Syndergaard.
Oh, no, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, he's hurt. No,
That's huge. And I mean, yeah, you look at that. You look at this right now. I mean, the Cardinals, hey, if the season ended right now, they'd be tied for a wild card spot. Or not even tied. I think I guess they're tied with the Phillies. If they lose to the Dodgers tonight, as you were talking about, the Dodgers had rallied to tie it up. The Cardinals would have a playoff spot right now. Obviously way too early even thinking about that kind of thing, but and you start to look around the league and you start wondering, the Mets and the Giants were teams that you expected the Cardinals to really be battling with, and you know, the Mets are 10-13, the Giants are 9-15, Colorado.
Yeah, the Giants got drilled tonight. I mean, they can't get anybody out. I saw 2 3-run home runs, but just flipping around while we've been on here against them.
Yeah,
and the Dodgers just won on an error.
Okay, well, that pushes the Dodgers to 13-12, which pretty much tie them with the Cardinals. But I mean, you're looking at Arizona and Colorado. Can they keep it up? If they don't, you know, are the Dodgers the only team? You know, only one team coming out of that division. The overall National League is looking that the Cardinals are not, at least right now. Let's put it this way: Cardinals are not going to be punished by that slow start. Because nobody has taken off and run. I mean, like I said, the Cardinals are only one game out of, they could be tied for first tomorrow. They beat the Reds and the Red Sox beat the Cubs, they're tied for first in the Central. And that's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, it'll be a tough one for the Cubs to win tomorrow night too, that night game in Boston. Mm-hmm. You know how I feel about those.
Yeah.
On the Sunday night. But, you know, just my opinion, the Cardinals aren't as good as I thought they would be at this point. But they're getting to be that team that I completely expected them to be at this point. And that you can see that in the last, the 11 games. 9 out of 11, I know the scheduling, but everything seems to be falling into place. All I wanted to see, I thought they would be decent, but I really thought they'd be right in the hunt to strike to go get a player. And I think that if everything stays the course, I think they can go get that guy and they can be right in the hunt.
The week that's coming up looks favorable again for the Cardinals. They have the Reds tomorrow with Mike Leake going. They have a 4-game set with the Brewers starting on Monday in St. Louis before going on the road to face the Braves and the Marlins, two teams that are not expected to do much. I'm not looking at the rotation. It's a good chance that they'll see Jaime Garcia. That would be a very interesting matchup to face Jaime Garcia this coming weekend. Right now, and you look at the whole month of May. If you're really worried about things, you got 3 with the Cubs, you got 2 with the Red Sox, but 3 with the Giants if they're struggling. You got 6 with the Dodgers, and then you go out and you also got Colorado. So that maybe by the end of the month, but you got a chance to push that lead up to, 5 games over 500. I mean, not lead, but the record up to 5 over 500, 6 over 500. I mean, you start doing that, and then you start looking at looking like a real team, and hopefully that's what we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. You get that 60 game mark around Memorial Day, and you really figured out what you've become.
Yep.
So I think the needle's pointing upwards. Let's put it that way.
Yep. So hopefully that'll be the case again. We've run a little long because that's what we do. But Alan and I will be with you next week, hopefully again talking about a very good week of Cardinal baseball. And until then, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!